Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
The net cash farm income for calendar year 2023 is forecast at nearly $158 billion, which is down about 21% relative to 2022.
Administrator of the Economic Research Service, Spiro Stefano.
They're decreasing about 4.7% in 2023. Now, that's following a forecast increase in 2022 that was record about 22.5%. So net farm cash receipts are down. So both crop and animal product receipts are forecast to decrease in 2023. And the largest dollar decreases are forecast for milk, corn, broilers, eggs, hogs, and soybeans.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
The CFPB's rule would simply require lenders to collect and report data on small business lending.
Talking about Consumer Protection Bureau's new rules for lenders, California Representative Maxine Waters.
This data would help drive competition in the market, lowering small business costs, and will help combat discrimination. Access to capital is an issue for many family farms who don't have the same access that larger agricultural corporations have. And yes, access to capital is an issue for our young people working in the gig economy, seeking to start a business of their own, but too often are told no by banks. Unfortunately, Section 1071 of Dodd-Frank was not implemented for 13 years. In fact, small business owners had to sue the CFPB under the Trump administration to force implementation of this rule.
From the other side of the aisle and from Nebraska, Representative Mike Flood.
I'm a businessman myself, and I'm proud to say that I've made a payroll every 2 weeks since I was 24 years old. And I'll tell you what happens in a situation like this. I'm also a borrower. I'm a borrower of small community banks across the state of Nebraska. You pass something like this. You go from 7 statutory data points, you go to 81 data points. I'm going to have to pay an accountant to sit down and sift through all of our business data to put this together for my bank, my lender, and hope that I get it right so that on the next bank exam, they're not calling me wanting a whole bunch more information. That's the real cost to small business. That's the real cost of businesses in this nation. That's what people in this town forget. It's small businesses. It's small town employers that make this country run, that make the money work so that people can wake up and have some cash in their pocket. So I will say this. You go from 7 points to 81 points. This is just another example where the CFPB has expanded the scope of the rule as far as possible.
Kentucky Representative Andy Barr.
The small business lending rule that was finalized in March is incredibly onerous. It imposes massive burdens on financial institutions, will be misleading and confusing for borrowers, and ultimately harm the very small business owners, the minority and women-owned small business owners that they say they want to help. Because those are the businesses that will not have access to capital and certainly not affordable capital.
And California Representative Young Kim.
The rule is nearly 900 pages and requires lenders to report 81 data fields. If the CFPB's proposal is enacted, small financial institutions will be forced to devote more of their time to comply with burdensome regulations rather than focusing on providing loans for small business owners. With credit tightening for small businesses due to persistent inflation, higher interest rates, and an uncertain economic environment, the CFPB Section 1071 rule would impose higher costs for small businesses and lead to a decrease in lending to small, minority-owned, woman-owned businesses. Earlier this year, the CFPB suffered a major data breach when an employee forwarded consumer information of more than a quarter million to a personal email account. So how can we trust the CFPB to properly manage the collection of additional data when it cannot efficiently safeguard existing data? So I would urge Director Chopra to go back to the drawing board on Section 1071 and issue a rule that gets it right without punishing small banks and small credit unions with higher compliance costs and burdensome requirements.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
On this vote, the yeas are 311, the nays are 114, with two recorded as present. Two-thirds voting in the affirmative, the resolution is adopted, and a motion to reconsider is laid upon the table.
Speaker of the House Mike Johnson last week on a historic vote in the House.
The clerk will notify the governor of the state of New York of the action of the House. Under Clause 5D of Rule 20, the chair announces to the House that in light of the expulsion of the gentleman from New York, Mr. Santos, the whole number of the House is now 434.
A strange vote where Republicans voted both for and against it, and Democrats same, including Representative Al Green of Texas.
I believe that the House has made a mistake today in going on record and expelling Mr. Santos from Congress. I believe it was a mistake because I believe that the process itself will now lend itself to whatever 290 persons believe to be a reason to expel a person, that becomes a reason for a person to be expelled. Whatever 290 persons can agree on, you can now expel a person. I don't think that that process is a fair and just process.
The chairman of the Ethics Committee for Mississippi, Michael Guest.
If you look at the report, if you read those findings, again, they find substantial evidence of multiple violations, which in my case clearly supported expulsion. We followed the Constitution and the way that this was to play out. And then the members of Congress have voted today. I take no pride in what has happened today. It is a very solemn day when you have to remove a member from Congress. And I wish Mr. Santos the best.
While many Republicans voted for it, leadership did not.
I would agree with the latter that, you know, there would have been nothing that we could have done to have convinced them that those who voted against expulsion today did not vote against expulsion because of lack of evidence, but they were concerned that it violated the precedent that has previously been set, that members have not been expelled without a conviction.
Another Democrat, Jamie Raskin from Maryland.
This was a Republican motion. You understand those were Long Island Republicans who led the drive to expel George Santos. Those were not Democrats who brought that motion up. The second thing is should we do a better job on researching Republican candidates and those who lie, cheat, and steal? Yeah, we should be.
Then Byron Donalds, a Republican from Florida.
I want to be clear. I am not finding fault with the Ethics Committee or their report. I am not. What I'm finding fault with is that our members have forgotten that everybody is afforded due process under law, not due process under the Ethics Committee. That's my concerns.
And explains why this is so concerning.
Let's just be very clear. We are all members of Congress. That doesn't mean everybody gets along. Some members will, some members won't, some members will be indifferent, and the body will move on. My concern is that when you make these massive changes from precedent, it changes the very nature upon which this institution is supposed to function. We've been lectured politically for the last 4 years, a lot of it in the press, about our institutions. What happened here today goes against the principles of our institutions. It does. And people can say whatever they want. Oh, it's OnlyFans, it's this, it's that. It's bigger than what he was accused of. My angst is not about what George was accused of. It's not, because I'm not defending it. It is about the process upon which he was expelled today. That is my concern.
And, of course, the distraction pushes a new farm bill back further. It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
This is the time of year where this becomes a really hot topic.
Bob Bray, CEO of Illinois Farm Business, Farm Management, on the most asked question at year end.
Our FBFM staff across the state of Illinois are visiting with farm clients on a daily basis now to talk about year end planning. And one of the first questions that comes up is this. What should their adjusted gross income be for the year 2023? And to help them analyze that, we think about three things that are not deductible. Those dollars spent for a living and your income taxes, and any principal payments that exceed your depreciation deduction, the topic of today's study. In my example on the screen, that comes to $130,000 for these non-deductible expenses. So that's one guideline to help us to define where we should land. Now, you might decide that your AGI wants to be lower than that because you want to reduce your tax liability further, and that's okay. We just need to recognize that when that occurs, we are generating income tax deferral, meaning there might be more tax that needs to be paid sometime later. But again, if that's the plan, that's a good plan. Just want to recognize when those things are occurring.
What's new and different in 23?
So we mentioned 100% bonus existed through 2022. For 2023, this is the first year where something less than 100% has been available since the beginning of the TCJA, the Tax Cuts Act, in 2018. And this is designed to be a continuing step down provision. So it'll be 60% in 2024, and we'll show you the full step down in a moment. The 179 deduction is the second group of information that we share for 2023. That's a large deduction, the largest deduction ever, I would say. 1.16 million is the maximum deduction that's available. And we have a purchase limit as well, and that's 2.89 million. What that means is if you spend more than 1.16 but less than 2.89, your deduction for 179 purposes is reduced dollar for dollar, such that if you spent over 2.89 million, you begin to lose that 179 deduction maximum of 1.16. All assets qualify, new or used, for the 179 deduction. You new and used also qualify for the bonus. One thing that does not qualify is if you're buying assets from a related party. And in this instance, think about lineal descendants. So if I sell a truck to my son, he will not be able to use these accelerated bonus provisions because that's a related party transaction. You know, oddly enough, a related party for this rule is not my brother or sister. So I sell a truck to my brother, he can use the accelerated depreciation rules shown on this screen. But we have to be aware that the asset must be placed in service to be eligible for a depreciation deduction. And my definition of that is it must be in a state of readiness for its intended use. So if you have a purchase order for a tractor that's going to be built in March, it doesn't meet this definition of a state of readiness. If you have a machine shed that's going to be constructed next March and they bring all the lumber to your site in December, that also does not meet this definition of in a state of readiness for its intended use. So to validate your depreciation deduction, be sure that the property is available to be placed into service.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
The high inflation that we got beginning in 21 initially emerged from a collision between very strong demand and pandemic-constrained supply.
Chairman of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell, on what caused the high inflation.
And the normalization of supply and demand conditions that we've seen has played a critical role in the disinflation, the coming down of inflation so far, as has the substantial tightening of monetary policy and overall financial conditions over the past 2 years. The strong actions that we've taken have moved our policy rate up and well into restrictive territory, by which we mean that tight monetary policy is putting downward pressure on economic activity and inflation. Monetary policy is thought to affect economic conditions with a lag, and the full effects of our tightening likely have not yet been felt. The forcefulness of our response to inflation also helped maintain the Fed's hard-won credibility, ensuring that the public's expectations of future inflation remain well anchored. Having come so far and so quickly, the FOMC is moving carefully forward as the risks of under- and over-tightening are becoming more balanced.
Powell also reiterates exactly what the role of the Fed is.
The thing that I talked about was monetary policy. So we use our tools to foster maximum employment and price stability, two equal goals in the law. And that involves raising interest rates and using our balance sheet to either slow gradually or speed up the economy to move the economy toward those goals. We also, though, regulate and supervise banks. We have a broad responsibility to support financial stability to the entire financial system, which we do really through our liquidity tools. That was the original purpose of central banks, was to be there with with liquidity, with cash. When bank runs emerge, and if there's a facility there that exists, then the bank run doesn't happen in the first place because people know they'll get their money. We also play an important role in the payment system, so we have pretty broad roles. People do expect things of us that we don't really do, and it is really important to respect the line. Most things in our system of government are and should be assigned to the elected branch. Nobody elected us to do things. We're appointed to do specific, narrow, really important things and stick to those things. It's the elected branch of people. They've stood for election. The president has, the Senate has, the Congress has. And it's very important to not walk onto their turf, because those things are consigned to the democratically elected branches. Very few things are assigned to an institution like the Fed that has the protections I mentioned. We serve long terms. We can't be fired except for malfeasance. And, Congress would have to pass a law to reverse one of our decisions. No one can do it. So we have to respect that independence by sticking to the jobs that we have, even though, it's very frequent. When I testify, which I do a lot, we had a senator speak to us at dinner the other night, and he pointed out that whenever they have, me or a Fed chair in the chair testifying, they always try to get us to support their fiscal policy,
nice.
Raising taxes, cutting spending, all those things. And we just can't do that. We have to stick to what we do and stay out of politics. And that's what keeps the Fed independence. And it's what enables us to be that rare thing in Washington, which is a non-political agency that is respected by both sides, where they'll give us the room. They'll criticize us publicly, but they'll give us the room to do our jobs. And our jobs are really critical for every American.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Yes, yes, the House had every right to do what it did.
Texas Representative Al Green on the floor of the House last week.
Yes, constitutionally, the House had the right to do what it did. So it's not about whether I differ with the Constitution or differ with whether the House had a right to do this. I believe that we have rights to do things, but I believe also that there are better ways to do things, and there are some ways that we should not do things. Prior to today, it has been said many times that 5 persons have been expelled, 2 for having committed crimes, and 3 for having been associated with the Confederacy and its rebellion against the Union, the United States.
Talking about the expulsion of New York Representative Republican George Santos.
What can we do? Well, we can impose sanctions. We can remove persons from their committee assignments. We can publish our findings. And we can allow the citizens, which every 2 years they have the opportunity to determine who will serve them, allow them to have the vote and let them determine whether or not they want a person that I might deem unfit to serve. Give them the opportunity to do so. I think that a bifurcated system works better than the system that we have now installed in the House of Representatives.
Representative Michael Guest is chairman of the Ethics Committee from Mississippi.
I'm not disappointed in leadership. As a matter of fact, I applaud leadership and the fact that they chose not to whip against this. They very easily, with a very narrow majority that we hold in Congress of 4-seat, they very easily could have whipped against this vote. They chose not to whip against this vote. Most waited until just moments before the vote to announce how they were going to be voting so that not to influence other members. You've seen Speaker Johnson say repeatedly this is a vote of conscience and that members need to vote their conscience in their district. And so the fact that leadership didn't support it in their vote, that's the decision that they have to make. But I do applaud leadership for not whipping against this vote and trying to protect Mr. Santos and keep him in the House of Representatives just to protect one of our very narrow majority.
But he says, be clear, the resolution was not from the Ethics Committee.
This was something that I filed as an individual member. I did not file it as the chairman of the Ethics Committee. I filed it because I felt so strongly about what was contained in the report that this is a case that justified expulsion. I worked with our New York members after they had previously filed this to allow them to make that privileged earlier in the week. Mr. Diaz-Esposito actually led the debate on this matter, but was kind enough to yield me time to talk through the ethics report so that I could defend the ethics report and also talk about due process. And that was one thing we heard earlier in the week. You know, has Mr. Santos been given due process? And I took substantial time trying to walk through, at least while I believe as a former prosecutor, that we had met that burden of due process.
And he was joined by Democrats like Jamie Raskin from Maryland.
I voted repeatedly not to kick George Santos out because there was neither a conviction in criminal court nor was there a conclusion of an ethics proceeding against him in the House of Representatives. That process concluded, and there was a series of dozens of very damning ethics findings that he had converted the money of his campaign donors into trips to Las Vegas, to Florida, to Botox treatments and other personal expenses. There was one episode which a member actually spoke about where his credit card was taken by George Santos and then falsely charged for an extra $5,000, which he converted to personal use as well. So is that conduct that is deserving of expulsion from the House of Representatives? It is, and there were ethics findings to back it up. So he lost me today at that point because there was formal process behind it.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
I'll tell you now, I don't think we're going to have a 23 farm bill.
Tom Sell is with Combest Sell and Associates.
There's only so many days left. Congress is going to be back up there for 3 weeks here at the end of the year. There's been a lot of talk throughout the year about the possibility of getting a farm bill done. But as you probably know, 3 weeks ago, when they were hashing out the agreement to keep the government funded, under a CR, a continuing resolution, they did pass a one-year extension of the farm bill. In doing so, they said, well, we can come back and we can re-up it. The farm bill is going to be an improvement to that baseline, so let's take care of the baseline. And then we can keep our momentum going to try and get a farm bill done in the first quarter of next year or even possibly in December. I just don't think there's any way it's going to happen in December.
Of course, part of the issue is for Congress to fund their priorities.
Trying to pass out some of those appropriations bills, get that process back in order in Washington, D.C. The appropriations bills are what fund the salary and expenses of the various agencies of the federal government. And that's why if it doesn't get done, you have a shutdown because the employees can't come to work because there's no funding there to support them. So we're trying to get that appropriations process back in order. And at the same time, they're also trying to do a special kind of supplemental spending bill for what? Israel, big problems there that need to be addressed. Ukraine, big controversial topic there that needs to be addressed in a civil way. And then Republicans are really fighting for, as part of this discussion, what? Some resources for border security. A very important issue for Texas. So given all of that, taking up so much oxygen and time, and controversy and attention and intellectual capacity and bandwidth, I just don't see any opportunity for the farm bill getting done this year.
Fact is, prices are lower.
Probably not going to get a farm bill this year, or certainly not going to get a farm bill this year. But we have a decent chance in the first quarter of 2024 to actually get it in place for the 24 crop year, just done late. I think it's important to recognize kind of the overall fiscal environment and economic environment that we're playing into now. And look, agriculture is a famously cyclical business, right? And we've kind of been riding this high of prices and global demand for some time with some short crops in key areas that have kind of kept those prices elevated. Unfortunately, that's not the case at this point. We've had significant inflation that has affected the farm families across this nation. We now have very high interest rates that are affecting the cost of working capital, not only for farmers, but for the merchants who market the products across the world and give our producers access to the world markets. So it's a challenging time. We hit a crest in 2022. It was record net farm income ever in the history of the U.S., more than $200 billion in net farm income for the farm families across this nation. In 2023, that dropped precipitously, the largest ever drop year over year in net farm income in the history of the U.S. It went from a projected, $206 billion down to $143, I believe. I may be slightly off on those numbers, doing that from memory. But it was big, almost a $60 billion decrease 1 year to the next. But even that, I think you'd probably say 23, but for the massive drought in this area, it could have been a good year. And it is going to be a decent year for a lot of farm families. $143 billion is still pretty healthy net farm income for the nation.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
In 2022, the U.S. exported $193 billion worth of ag products. Fiscal 2023, that dropped to just under $179 billion. And the new projection for fiscal 24?
$169.5 billion.
Meanwhile, USDA's chief economist Seth Meyer says while exports are falling, the U.S. ag product imports could hit $200 billion for a $30 billion trade deficit. He says there are plenty of possible reasons for all of this.
Some might be the strength of the U.S. dollar. Some might be better performance of the U.S. economically than some of our trading partners around the world in terms of GDP growth. Some of it might be changes in the market and things we're always worried about, which is competitiveness.
Meyer says, though, the U.S. export number is still above historic averages and basically
trade is still good, still strong, maybe not as robust as it was for a couple years.
And he says a lot can happen between now and the end of this fiscal year. Gary Crawford, Washington.